Three, two, one. Tribal courts got one more show of support with the unanimous appeals court decision. The ruling involved the cases of women from Fort Yukon and Venati, who received custody of children through tribal courts, but the state refused to recognize the adoptions as legal. Attorney Mike Waldery with the Tanana Chiefs Conference says the ruling may have a number of impacts, primarily in the area of tribal court issues and Indian child welfare.
The main thrust of the opinion, however, held that Indian tribes in Alaska did not lose their power to have tribal courts that could decide Indian child welfare matters, which is quite opposite what the Alaska Supreme Court has held twice. Because of that decision by the Alaska State Supreme Court, we've had an awful lot of litigation and controversy between the tribes and the state, where the tribes have stepped into a domestic relation situation and taken some protective action with regards to a child. It's always created a somewhat of a sticky wicket in how to deal with those kinds of situations. The state not knowing whether or not they should step in and try and challenge the tribal decision or just to look the other way.
Wallery says this particular appeals court ruling probably won't stimulate further court cases over tribal governments, since there are a number of ongoing cases already in the legal system. But he does hope that this ruling accomplishes something.
The statesman-like thing to do for the state at this point is to sit down with the tribes and negotiate and try and work out a cooperative relationship between the state and tribes. That has been the response by most of the other Western states in dealing with Indian issues. They found that 200 years of litigation never got anybody anywhere, but that in the last 20 years, since the Western states have changed their attitude towards tribes, seen them as resources, seen them as opportunities to deal with Native people in a culturally sensitive manner, and recognizing their political rights, that in so doing, they can actually benefit the state as a whole. And as a result, most states have gone to a system of negotiation and cooperation with tribes rather than a fall-on-your-sword opposition to tribal government. I would hope that the state would sit down and start a cooperative dialogue with the tribes.
This latest court ruling sends the issue back to district court to decide villages' tribal status, an issue that's also before the U.S. Supreme Court. But even so, this could be one less hurdle for tribal governments to cross. For KUAC Local News, I'm Ann Thornton. Reporting from Fairbanks, I'm Ann Thornton. Three, two, one. The Fairbanks Economic Development Center established the pilot project. Center Director Cindy Marquette Adams says it's designed to match successful women business owners with women who are just starting out.
It happens all the time with small businesses all over the nation. They start up, they have a wonderful product, or they have a very good idea of a service they would like to offer, but they don't have the skills, whether it's to develop a small business plan or to do marketing or market research. They don't have those skills in order to make that dream come true. And so what we are trying to do is provide them with people in the community that have those skills, match them with those people so that they can move forward with making that small business work.
The center created five teams. The mentor provides advice and insight into how to run a business and helps troubleshoot specific problems. Marquette Adams hopes that team effort may help the new business owners avoid some of the mishaps involved in establishing and running a business.
So that made a lot of sense.
One of the five teams is Karen Brooks and Mary Johnson. Johnson owns Fairbanks Court Reporting, and Brooks has been in business for a few years with her therapeutic massage center. Although the businesses themselves are quite different, Brooks expects to learn a few things about balancing all her projects.
I'm not very good at paperwork, and so I have piles of paper. You know, being organized, I tend to sort of have piles, and right now it's just me working. And I'm getting to the point where I'm thinking about maybe hiring someone or have someone to help me with that, because I have so much going on. Not only do I do massage therapy, but I do stress reduction workshops, I do acupressure, I'm a Reiki master, I have workshops in my office, I have 7 children, and so I'm very busy.
Mary Johnson offers tips on hiring and firing. During this first meeting, she also brings up the good parts of being a business owner and the bad. Long hours and the fact that she still doesn't take a salary for herself are outweighed, though, by the satisfaction of owning her own business.
And I feel like I've really grown personally and professionally in the last 3 years. I'm 40 years old, and I was a secretary for 15 years, and then I worked for somebody else, and then I started working for another court reporter 5.5 years ago. But I feel by taking this step, by starting out little with one person and then growing and growing and growing, I've grown a lot too. I'm real organized, and that's where I can help you.
Over the course of 6 months, the teams will learn a lot together. Many of the business tips that the teams will share are common to all business owners, no matter how different the line of work. Marquette Adams at the Economic Development Center says the teams were chosen because of other factors too.
We tried to match personalities as well as needs. In the case of Karen and Mary, there are skills that Karen has that probably Mary could tap into, even though Mary is the person who's supposed to be helping Karen. But I think as they get farther down the road, they'll realize that Mary has some very strong skills that Karen can tap into.
This is our first meeting, outside of the whole group. And when we first met, after talking to Karen, I thought, there isn't really anything I can help her with. This woman's got it together. She's not starting a new business. She's been in business, and she's real successful. And I thought, she doesn't need me. So this has been real interesting, what's come out so far today. Because I was afraid I wouldn't be able to help you. I was afraid you'd help me more than I could help you.
Tomorrow we'll hear from another team taking part in the Women's Network for Entrepreneurial Training. For KUAC Local News, I'm Ann Thornton. Reporting from Fairbanks, I'm Ann Thornton. Three, two, one. The team project for women starting out in business may have been designed for someone like Sharon Oswald. Oswald has a home-based sewing business, which she runs while holding a full-time job.
I work during the day for the Army, and I do all their sewing of their tents, clothes, and sleeping bags. And I'd like it to be where I'm my own boss, and if I'm putting in all these hours, it's for myself, not always somebody else. And with the way the budget cuts and everything have been going over the last few years, at times I feel like we're going to get phased out, and then I'm going to have something to do to, keep working and pay the bills and that.
Oswald started her business 2 years ago and says things have really picked up in the past year. Working out of her log home in North Pole, a portion of her spacious living room has become a sewing work area. Oswald is surrounded by huge windows, and 3 cats look on while she works at what she calls her other full-time job, this one filling her evenings, weekends, lunch hours, and sometimes early morning hours before she leaves for work. Starting a business at home is easier when you have the room for it. Oswald's unfinished basement offers all the space she needs right now.
Yeah, we feel that this would be an excellent area for doing all my sewing and upholstery work. And
Oswald's husband also helps with the business. Right, he runs the office and keeps the books. That takes up another upstairs room. Even though the basement has the space, Oswald says they have talked about the idea of turning the upstairs into the business and living in the basement.
During the day, with my big windows out front, I like sewing up there because I can see customers come and go. I can watch the moose walk through the yard while I'm sewing. There's excellent light up there. And it is a little bit easier when someone drives up. I'm right there to deal with them. It's not, I hear the doorbell.
run across the basement, up the stairs, get to the door, and you're going, may I help you? And they just sort of look at you like...
That kind of decision is something Jinx Sturgis may be able to help with. Sturgis owns New Horizons Gallery. As the mentor in this team, she will suggest things for Oswald to keep in mind while she determines which direction to take her business. Sturgis already has Oswald checking out the competition and working on a balance sheet. Back in 1979, Sturgis bought her family business, where she learned the ropes whether she wanted to or not.
It wasn't that I went to business school and learned any fine tricks. I had to learn it all through friends, through experience, through the hard knocks. So whatever I know from the hard knocks of life or from the years of experience, I can maybe save Sharon just a little bit, but she's going to have to go through most of them herself anyway. All I can say is, well, look for this and be wary of this, and at some point, maybe when she needs it most, she'll remember something I said, and that's all you can do.
The organizer of this pilot program, Fairbanks Economic Development Center Director Cindy Marquette Adams, says helping the newcomers look out for the problems is one goal of this project. But real success will come if they just have a plan.
Because that's why most businesses fail. They just don't take the time to plan. Mm-hmm. So we're hoping that's one of the major things that come out of it. If they could, after 6 months, if they all walk away with a draft or a complete business plan, we won. You know, that's it, we won.
For KUAC Local News, I'm Ann Thornton. Reporting from Fairbanks, I'm Ann Thornton.
The night before Christmas. Understand?
Christmas? We don't believe in it, do we?
Oh, no, of course we don't. Do you believe that on this night your wish could come true? Would you?
Should I?
A Russian Christmas tale is a fairy tale. Magic and music on Christmas Eve 1952 affect the lives of people at a Siberian concentration camp. Playwright Anatoly Antohin says he wanted to write a play about Russian history and decided to go with a fairy tale, since there hasn't been Christmas in Russia for more than 70 years.
Fairy tale is difficult to write, but especially a modern one. So it does take place in a labor camp when the girl was looking for her father. And according to the prophecy of one of the old prisoners, when the father will recognize the girl, everybody will be free. And it's a Christmas wish. And there is a sad but happy end. And I thought this structure will let me talk about very dramatic, if not tragic, historical experience in Russia. And nevertheless, to have it light and with hope. And the name of this girl is Nadezhda, which is the hope.
For a Christmas show, Antohin says music is essential. The musical score comes from Jim Bell, who wrote 12 songs to tie in with Antohin's script. Soviet theater designer Danila Korogatsky came to Fairbanks to set the concentration camp on stage. The use of banners and lighting create shadows that bring a Russian feel to the production. Nadia's search for her father and the need for family also hit home with Antohin. He hasn't seen his own parents since he defected from Russia 10 years ago.
I'm writing about something which is my past, and past is never really past, it's always present, and I feel kind of strange return in my memories, and it's not based on particular characters, but in life. But it does reflect some themes, because I keep thinking about my parents. I didn't see them for 10 years. They never saw my their American grandchildren. And what does it mean in terms of a broken family or broken hearts? And then the theme about the daughter and father, in a sense, it's real, but how it's done, the interpretation is it's different. this theme of family. You can say, well, he took it from his own life, which is true, because you've been thinking about something which causes you pain, and then you artistically will find a way to express it.
Jindal's musical score offers some humorous lyrics and some haunting melodies. With more than 300 songs to his credit, Bell says the task of writing for this play has been challenging, but fun.
The most difficult part was marrying the script and the music and getting the concept organized so that we understood what we were trying to convey to the public, to the audience. And hopefully we've got it together at this point to where the music matches the script and it has a kind of a message, and a hopeful message too. It is a Christmas tale, but it's also a fairy tale, so it's got all these kind of levels. I think kids are going to take it on one level and enjoy the characters turning into a witch or a bear or whatever, and adults will understand the historical perspective more, you know. So it's definitely got several levels that you can appreciate it on.
And Anatoly Antohin isn't sure what impression his play will have on theater goers.
By the nature of the material, it's a drama, so it's a sad. At 1952, it was 17 million people in prison. It's an enormous number. So there is a sadness. But because it's a fairy tale, there is an element of comedy, and the music carries both aspects, and the comical aspects and the dramatic, which is, it's a sad. But I do believe in a combination of tears and love, because I think that's what this life is about.
Playwright Anatoly Antohin, his play, A Russian Christmas Tale, is also UAF's entry in the American College Theater Festival. For KUAC Local News, I'm Ann Thornton. Reporting from Fairbanks, I'm Ann Thornton. 3, 2, 1. Fairbanks Mayor Wayne Nelson has scheduled an executive session just prior to next Monday night's council meeting. Nelson says the council needs to discuss what to do next.
We really had two options at this time, to either continue the suspension with pay until trial, or to have it be a suspension without pay. With the information that I have at this time, it would be difficult for me to recommend keeping her on with pay.
More than 20 people were called to testify before the grand jury, several city employees, as well as the borough clerk. And City Councilman Bob Sundberg also was asked to testify about a raise that Roberson received earlier this year from the City Council. Sundberg made the motion to give the clerk that raise after she wrote a memo asking for one. Sundberg was sorry to hear about her indictment.
I was on the City Council back in 1980 when she was hired by the City Council after Kay Day left the job. And I have been certainly satisfied with her work. She has been very cooperative and helpful to the council, and I'm just sad to see this happen.
Roberson has been city clerk for 10 years. The bribery charge against her dates back to April or May of last year. The theft charges go as far back as October of 1987. Even though the indictment isn't the same as a guilty verdict, Mayor Wayne Nelson says if there is a problem with the system, he wants to make sure that the city fixes it.
Particularly if this has been going on for 3 years or whatever, that the system itself is at least partly at fault, that there should have been checks and balances involved that would have prevented this from happening, particularly over an extended period of time. And we're going to take a real, real close look at this and at other departments and see if this kind of thing is possible, and if so, make sure that we make it impossible.
But Nelson's predecessor is a little more skeptical. Former Fairbanks Mayor Jim Nordale worked with Roberson the 2 years he ran the city council. Nordale finds the charges hard to believe.
Certainly there's nothing been proved yet, so it remains to be seen whether or not these charges are going to be supported. But I honestly can't believe that Karma would, she's certainly not somebody who would, my view, would be the sort to deliberately try to either misappropriate funds or do the wrong thing in her job.
Roberson has hired attorney Dick Madsen to represent her. Madsen says he won't comment until he knows more about the case and has heard the grand jury testimony. But he does say, based on what he knows right now, it's the first time someone faces an indictment for saving the city money. For KUAC Local News, I'm Ann Thornton.